Today's shir is Masechta Baba Kama, Daf Kuf Tes Zayin. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisbaruch on Daf Kuf Tes Vav Amud Beis, 10 lines from the bottom. In the previous shir, Gemara had spoken about a situation where somebody, where Levi had 10 barrels of Truma, and he had to, and we know that when Levi gets 10 barrels of Ma'aser Rishon, and we know when he gets Ma'aser Rishon, he has to take off 10% to give Truma Gedoyla to the Kohen. And he sees that one of these barrels is about to break, or one of these barrels is going to become disqualified because it was left open and there's a concern of Gilui, that maybe a snake had deposited its venom into that barrels, into that barrel. He says that this barrel, designating to be the Trumas Meiser for all the other barrels. So the Mishnah, the Brice had said that if it was wine, it would be acceptable if he would do so. But if it was oil, it would not be acceptable because not oil, the oil that you're designating has no use. Amar, we learned in the Brice, as we just discussed, one may not do this with oil, because it's a loss to the Kohen, that he's going to get oil which is not usable. Ask the Mamashna Shemin, the oil is Tame, the Kohen can't use it anyway. Mamashna Shemin, why is there a loss? The Roy Lahadlik. It can be used for fuel, and now when it's going to be not usable, then it's a hefsa to the Kohen. So Yayin Nami Roy Lazilif. Wine is also usable. So why are we more concerned by Shemin than we are by Yayin? V'chitem zilif la malsahu, says the Marf, you'll say as an answer, well, nobody really does zilif. Zilif was not done people sprinkling the wine on their home. V'mishmu m'shunam rabchia, shoshin melug v'selah, wine that's bought for drinking, you pay for a lug of that wine, a seller. Mezalfin, but wine that's used for spritzing, melug b'shtayim, they would pay double. So you see that they do use wine and they're ready to spend more money on zilof than they are on drinking. Answers the Gemara, hachem ma'iskinen, this price is speaking about what type of wine, b'chadosh new wine. Wine that's new doesn't have a good fragrance and therefore it's not used for zilof. Ask the Gemara, royal yashnoi. But you can let the, even though this wine currently is new, and as we just said, it can't be used for zilof, it isn't going to be used for zilof, but it will ultimately get old, and at that point it could be used. And since the Gemara, leaving it around till it get old is dangerous, because maybe somebody's going to forget and come from to drink for it. So since it's not really have any value, there's no hefsid. So, by oil also, if you're going to leave the oil around, you're going to use it for fuel, you use it a little at a time, and by leaving it a little at a time, you're going to maybe use it you're going to use it for drink, for eating, which is of course usur. So why by oil did the Gemara say that you should not be allowed to do it? And we said that the reason is that you're causing the Kohen a loss. Why is it causing the Kohen a loss? You're going to be able, you should be concerned for the color. Answers the Gemara, we're not worried about the color. The manachlei b'kleimos. You put it into a keli that's not nice, and therefore, since it's a keli that's dirty, it's never going to be used for drinking. So for food, ask them if that's the way you're approaching this. So then, yain namin naich leklei mos. Why don't you say the same thing by wine? Says the Gemara. What do we want to do with this wine? We want to use this wine for zilof. Hashtel zilof kabbalah. So says the Gemara. Were you going to use this wine for zilof that leklei monos kamanachlei? Are you going to put it into a dirty vessel? Nobody's going to put wine that they want to use for sprinkling and give the home a nice fragrance and put it into a dirty keli. So now the Gemara suggests that this issue of takala, are we concerned that something that's going to become tamei, and if you leave it around, you make something which is tamei, if you leave it around, you may come use it inappropriately, actually suggests the Gemara Tanoihi. The Tanya Chavish Shal Yain Shal Truma Shal Nitmas, if you have a barrel of wine of Truma, which is tamei, Beshamay's opinion is Tishafach HaKol, you should spill it all out, because leaving it around, we need to be concerned for Takala. Beselam Tas Zilof. And Beselam's opinion is you could use it for Zilof. You're not allowed to drink that keli, that wine. But here we're not concerned about drinking it, and therefore just spritzing is mutter, and we're not worried that you're going to come to drink it. Amr b'shmob rabbiyosi, to which b'shmob rabbiyosi comments, aniachriya, I'm going to decide this discussion. But bias, if it's in the house, tasa zilif, we're not concerned that for takola. But if it's out in the field, since in the field there's no need for zilif, until you're going to bring it home, we're going to have to be concerned that who knows what's going to be. Therefore, besada, in the field, to shafach hakol, you should spill it out. Says the Gemara, ikka d'amri, and some in commenting on this decision that Rabbi Shmuel made, ikka d'amri b'yoshen, that only Rabbi Shmuel was saying his halacha by old wine, which is immediately usable for zilif. Ikadami biyoshin tasa zilif or bechadosh, but by new wine where there's a concern that you have to wait till it becomes usable, there Rabbi Shmuel is going to hold to shafach hakol. Amrloi, and the Chum said to Rabbi Shmuel, en achro shlishis machras. This is not a legitimate way, suggests the Gemara, for making a decision. So Rashi explains, because what is the definition of achro? Achra means you take two opinions, and then the third opinion tries to recognize both of these opinions and come up with a psak based on what was stated by the two opinions. But says Rashi, in this case, the Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel never indicated this point that Rabbi Shmuel's making, that there's a difference between bias and sada. So what is the concept of achra? The concept of achra is that we follow achirabim lahatis. I follow the majority. But if this new opinion brought into this discussion something that wasn't part of the discussion before, that can't be the way to machria, the way to make a decision on a machlaikus. That is the way Rashi explains. Rabbeinu Chananel has a different explanation. He says, achra shlishis means a third generation. Rabbi Shmuel was a third generation after Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And since he was a third generation, a person who's so far away cannot be the one to make this decision. But apparently, and this is what I saw Rabbeinu Chananel, the Ramami Panu Pass quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, that if it was a second generation, then he can make achra. And the way the Mefarshim differentiate is if the Talmud had seen, if the person who's making the achra had seen the person who, the ones that had this machlaikis, then he's qualified to make achra. But if he's so far away from them, he's a third generation, he never saw the actual Tanoim who had this disagreement, he's not qualified to make a achra. Another pshat that I said, that, and this is very similar to the original pshat, that the Aruch says, the definition of achra is that the two are arguing, and the third one says like one of them. But here, he's indicating a whole new pshat, and that's not called achra. So, we learned in the Mishnah, if somebody said, we had the case with the honey and the wine, and the person said, I'll save your honey, but the price of me saving your honey, it might be pouring out my wine, you'll have to pay me for the wine, then the halacha is that the person has to pay, because that was what was made up up front. Ask the Gemara, but why would that be an halacha? Amai, just because he stipulated this way, why should that be an halacha? For Neimele, let the person who owns the honey, who had to agree to this demand, Lemele, he could say to him, Meshatani Bach, I didn't really mean to agree to what you said. I only said Meshatani Bach. I was under duress. And because I was under duress, I said what I said, not that I really meant what I said. Says the Gemara, where do we see, so before we go further, that the Achroinim and the Rishonim ask a question. We have a concept throughout Shas of Dvarim Shebelev Einam Dvarim. You can't say, well, this is what I meant. So isn't the whole principle of Meshat Ani Bach based on Dvarim Shebelev have a Dvarim? He didn't say it, but that's what he meant. So many Rishonim say that, of course, that we can't say, well, I didn't mean it, and rely on his Dvarim Shebelev. And they even go as far to say, even if there's a umdana, even if it's obvious that that's what he meant, we still can't rely on Dvarim Shebelev. The reason here it's different is because, A, it was done, the Ramban says, it was done under duress. And since it was done under duress, that's why, in this case, he could say Meshat Ani Bach, which will fit right into the Gemara that we're about to learn in a moment. Other Rishonim say that, actually, the person who's saving the other person's honey has a mitzvah to save the other person's honey. So since he really was obligated to do what he did, that's why he could say Meshat Ani Bach. And here says the Gemara, where do we find the precedent for being able to say Meshat Ani Bach? Milo Tanya, Harei Shai Baruch Beis Asurim. Somebody was fleeing prison. Vaisa Moberis, and there was a Moberis Lefanov, there's a boat there. Amalai, and the person says to the person who's running, who's taking care of the boat, till dinner, take a dinner, Vavireni, and let me go and take me to the other side. So the loch, which is a very inflated place. And again, the Rishonim point out that here it's speaking about a case that where there's a known price. And since there's a known price, that's why we could say Meshat Ani Bach, where he's charging more. And therefore, Ein Lo Yelo Scharoi. He's only entitled to what is the regular price. However, point out the Rajba and the Meiri, that's only if he hasn't paid yet. But if he paid, and now he says, well, I want back from my payment to you because you're overcharged, he has no right to say so. Ein Lo Yelo, he won't get it back. Alma. But what do we see? That even though he made this claim, the Amalei, he could say, Meshat Ani Bach. I really didn't mean it. I was just under pressure. And I agreed to the exorbitant price in order to be able to run away. So why not here also, Hachinamilei, Meshat Ani Bach? And again, many Rishonim point out, and we made this point, that Meshat Ani Bach is only because, he could only make this claim because the Rishonim are very troubled. If Meshat Ani Bach becomes an acceptable way of living, then we won't be able to have business. A person can always say, Meshat Ani Bach, I didn't mean it. And therefore they say, only in this case, where A, there was a mitzvah to help this person run away. B, there was the person who made this, who agreed, was under extreme pressure, can he say Meshat Ani Bach? In other circumstances, he cannot say so. Answers the Gemara. Holy dummy, our Mishnah should be similar to the Sefer. Let's go, the Sefer said, Vermelay Tenezabasach Rehreni, answers the Gemara. What say if he said that this is what I'm offering? So now we need to understand, ask the Gemara, Mishnah Resha, Mishnah Sefer. Why is in the Resha could he say Meshat Ani Bach and not in the Sefer? To which Rami Bacham explains, the Sefer is talking about Tzayir HaShoyle Dogim Anayam. A fisherman who's catching fish, Vamale, and at that point, the person who is being interrupted from fishing is saying, by you asking me to carry you, to travel again and take you, I had a loss, because at that time, I could have caught fish. And therefore, you can't say Mishat and Nibach. Whereas in the Reisha, the person wasn't doing anything in that time. So asking him to help me get over the river is not that I was taking him away from something that he could have been earning money at that time. And therefore, since it was under the circumstances that we discussed, that's all we could, the halacha allows us to say, Mishat and Nibach. So this question of Mishat and Nibach is discussed in a number of areas of halacha. One, I saw that the Shas of Chus from around Rattenburg says there was somebody who had a son, a daughter, that he was anxious to marry off, and he found a shatkan, a matchmaker, and the matchmaker helped him find a match for his child. And now the shatkan wants a significant fee for his services. And the question is he entitled to it? So the Rambam Rattenberg says, we look at our Gemara. He says, if this shatkin has a job, has a business, and because he was involved in helping make this match, he wasn't able to pay attention to his business. So that's the case that we just learned, where he's entitled to ask even for an exorbitant fee. But if he wasn't busy at that time anyway, he's a retired individual or whatever, and in that case, he cannot ask for an exorbitant fee, which is very similar to Ramban in Teres Adam, speaks about a case where there's a doctor who also wants an exorbitant fee for what he did to help a person. And the patient is saying, well, what you're charging is exorbitant. I'm not prepared to pay that kind of an exorbitant fee. What is the halacha? So says Ramban, here, we don't even pay attention. Well, does this doctor have another job that he could be doing at this time or not? Because the Ramban explains, here, there's a different consideration. When you pay a doctor, you're not paying the doctor, says the Ramban, necessarily for his time or necessarily for what there is a standard fee. You're paying the doctor for his knowledge, for his wisdom. And it's very hard, says the Ramban, therefore, to put a strict limit on that. And therefore, says the Ramban, whatever was agreed upon is what you would have to pay the doctor. Says the Gemara, Shatuf na chamar v'chamar chaveri. We learned in the Mishnah that if the river is about to flood his donkey and somebody else's donkey, and shalo yafim mana, his donkey is worth $100, and the other person's donkey is worth $200. So he leaves his donkey and he takes care of the other person's donkey. The Reisha says, he's only entitled to whatever is the fee for doing so. However, if he stipulated, you're going to have to reimburse me, if you want me to do this, you're going to have to reimburse me for the loss of my donkey, then he has to pay him. So the Gemara asked the question, these two halachas that we just learned by the wine and by the donkey are identical. So v'tzricha, why was it necessary for the Mishnah to mention both cases? Answers the Gemara, the Ish min kamaisa, if we only talked about the wine, hasamu de kipara shavle de me kulei, when he stipulated, I want you to pay back for the entire, pay me for all the wine I lost, that's when he has to be paid. Mishim de yudai kamasbid, he went and he poured out his wine. So the fact that he went to pour out his wine is the reason that you have to reimburse him. Avul Hocha, in the case of the donkey that we just discussed, he didn't kill the donkey. The Mimela, he left his donkey, and therefore his donkey drowned. But he didn't drown the donkey. Maybe Neima Elay El Schara. He's not entitled for the entire value of the donkey. Vyashmin and Sefer, Hochu de Bastama. Here we could understand, under where the stipulation was not made, that Elay El Schara is only entitled to whatever he's supposed to get for a fee. Mishim de Memela, because he didn't do anything in actively killing his donkey. Avil Hossam, in the case of the wine, where even if he didn't stipulate it, but because he wants to help somebody else, what he did was b'yadayim, he actively went and poured out his wine. Ema fil b'stama yavad meitkula, that even if he didn't say it, he should be entitled to the entire value of the wine. That's why tzricha, we needed to learn both cases. By Rav Minei Rav Kahana Mirav, what's going to be the halacha? And in this case, where he stipulated that I'm ready to give up my donkey, but you'll have to pay, it's in order for me to be able to save your donkey, but you have to pay me for the value of my donkey, which we've been learning. The person will have to pay for the donkey, and he agreed that he has to pay for the donkey. What happens if Baruch Hashem, he was busy saving the other person's donkey, and what? But his donkey, Valet Shleime Elav, his donkey survived. Now, what will be the halacha? And the Gemara introduces, so the way the Rishonim explained the question, the stipulation that was issued, that he said, how do we understand the stipulation? Do we understand that what he meant with the stipulation was to say that if I end up losing my donkey, then you're going to have to reimburse me? But if I don't end up losing my donkey, then obviously there's nothing to reimburse. Or do we understand that no, you are obligated to do, you're obligated to pay me for my donkey no matter what happens here? Amalei, so Rav says, the way to look at this question, you agreed to pay me for my donkey. The moment that you paid, that you agreed to pay for my donkey, that's what you have to pay. I, Baruch Hashem, my donkey survived. That's Baruch Hashem, my good luck. Says the Gemara, we have such a precedent. Rav Safra was going with a group of people, and there was a lion that accompanied them, that was protecting them. But says the Gemara, every night, one of the members of the group would give them one of their donkeys to have, to the lion should have what to eat. So says the Gemara, Kimata Zamni de Rav Safra, the night of Rav Safra came, Shadalei Chamra, so he gave his donkey, V'loi Achli, but the lion didn't eat it. Kadna Rav Safra V'zachabei, and in the morning, Rav Safra took back his donkey. Amalei, so we see that even though he was supposed to participate, it doesn't make a difference. He gets back his donkey. Amalei Rachma Diftal Ravina, Lamalei Lemiskibei, why do you have to do an act of ownership? Nay, the Chafgarei, what? He was mafgrit. He gave away the donkey, but he only gave it away, adated the Arya Afgarei. He only gave it away because it was his turn to give the lion food. But it was not his intention, adated the Kula Alma Loy Afgarei. So it never left his possession. And since it never left his possession, why would it be considered hefker? Says the Gemara, Amalei, he responded, indeed, it was no need for Rav Safra to do a new act of kinyan. Why Rav Safra did it? Rav Safra l'rafcha de milsa d'avad, he only did it that there shouldn't be any question if anybody's going to want to claim or do something to take ownership, that he solved all of those considerations. One of the things we see is that hefker is, according to the Gemara, certainly in the Havamina, says the tzais, hefker works even before somebody takes it. The act of hefker is not that somebody else took ownership of it. The fact that I was mafker it makes it hefker. And that's why Rav Safra felt that as soon as he made it hefker, what he needs to do is take back ownership. So the Rishonim try to understand, what is the Gemara trying to teach us from this story of Rav Safra? The Tosfos Shanz tells us that it's considered that as long as you did what you were supposed to do, it's considered that you fulfilled your stipulation. So Rav Safra gave away his donkey. I, Baruch Hashem, the lion ended up not eating it. That doesn't make a difference. And Al Gemara too. This person was ready to give up his donkey. The donkey was saved. That doesn't mean he didn't do what he had to do. Another shot that the Orach Chaim suggests is the Gemara's questioning is giving up your donkey, which ultimately you're going to get back, considered an act of hefker? And the Gemara says that it's considered an act of hefker. Another explanation is the Nemuka Yosef's explanation. Nemuka Yosef says he got back the donkey, and none of the other people in the group were entitled to that donkey. Here too, in our Gemara, even though I took out the time to save the other person's donkey, and I was ready to give up my donkey, but Baruch Hashem, my donkey survived, I still keep the entire donkey. That's the way the halacha looks. So Tosfos asks, why is this not considered a hefker? When Rav Safra gave up his donkey, he was certainly under the impression and believing that the lion will eat his donkey. And since he was convinced and sure that that's not that's going to happen, so why is it not considered a full-fledged act of hefker? So the Nesiva says that there's a difference between somebody who declares something hefker or something that becomes hefker because of yiyush. He says when somebody declares something hefker, the owner forfeits his legal ownership. In our Gemara, it wasn't that Rav Safra explicitly declared that this donkey that he was giving to the lion should be hefker. What he meant to say was that I'm doing what I have to do, and I'm giving my share, I'm giving my donkey to the lion. That's yiyush. He's giving up ownership, but he didn't declare it officially hefker. So says the Ktzais that in Hilchas Hefker, there's a difference between hefker, where you deliberately declare something hefker, versus where it becomes hefker through yiyush. And now Gemara is only hefker through yiyush, and since it's only hefker through yiyush, that's not considered full-fledged hefker. And if the circumstances change, the halacha will be that he could keep it. It's not even considered hefker. It says the Gemara, by my name, Rebbe. As we've been discussing, the river is about to flood his donkey and the other person's donkey. V'yard lahatzel, and he made this stipulation that he's going to forfeit his donkey in order to save the other person's donkey, but he was not successful. V'yard lahatzel lahitzel. What will be the halacha? Mahu. He stipulated you're going to have to pay me for what I did, but I didn't accomplish anything. Will he have to pay for the donkey that he lost, his donkey that he lost or not? Amalei, so Rebbe said to him, Zu Shaila. It's a big question you ask. And Eloi Eloi. And he says that he's only entitled for payment for what he did, but not entitled to get paid for his entire donkey. The Rav Shimon Shkop says, how do we understand the Gemara's question? One way of learning the Gemara's question, that's the simple way of learning the Gemara's question, that he was unsuccessful. He made the stipulation that I'm going to forfeit my donkey in order to save your donkey, but he ended up being unsuccessful in saving the other person's donkey. The other way of learning is that he didn't need to save the other person's donkey. Minas Shamayim, the other person's donkey was saved. And it seems that he holds the daf in both cases. Now, certainly, says the Maram Padua, that he's only entitled to his salary in a case where he made the stipulation. But let's say he hadn't even made a stipulation, where the Mishnah says that if you don't make an explicit stipulation or you are entitled to a schara, here you wouldn't even be entitled to schara. Because when are you entitled to schar? You're entitled to schar when you were successful under these cases. Only when you stipulated are you going to be entitled to schar no matter what. But if you didn't stipulate, you wouldn't be entitled to schar even. Eisvei, ask the Gemara, the Braisa teaches us, somebody hired a messenger to bring various vegetables to an individual who's sick. And he finds, by the time he comes back, the sick person was passed away, or hopefully Hivri, he got better. So now he doesn't need the vegetables. Is the halacha nice? He still has to pay his salary. So you see that even if you weren't successful, you're entitled. Amalei, midami, hasam, there is a whole different concept. You hired me for a job, and I did my job. If you hired me for a job, and I did my job, I did my job, and I'm entitled to my salary. Hacha, I'm not a shliach, because I didn't do my job. I was supposed to save your donkey, and I didn't. If a group of people were traveling in the desert, and there were people that came to attack them, so now, and they were able to get them to back off by paying them off. So now the question is, all these people who were saved, how do they divide the payment that they made to this person? How do we divide that obligation? How do we divide that obligation? B'chashvin lifi mamon. So we says the Gemara, we make a decision how much each person had money carrying with them. And the Meiri explains, we don't look at how rich, what the Gemara, when it says lifi mamon, doesn't mean that we look at how rich and poor every person here is. That's insignificant to making a determination here. Rather, he explains the definition of lifi mamon is how much money was each one of them carrying with them. And by seeing how much money each one was carrying with them, that's how we can make a determination, how much was this worth to you. We don't take into consideration the amount of people, and every person should pay an equal amount. However, if people were traveling and they hired a guide to take them, we also take in consideration how many people there were, because each person is, it's a question of the nefashos. He's making sure that they'll be safe. But then this says the Mishnah, says the Gemara, v'loyishanu v'minik ha-chamarim. You always do what is the minik ha-mokim. A very important concept whenever we speak about such situations. The halacha tells us that we should take into consideration the minik ha-mokim for paskening such a shaila. Says the Gemara, Shem Chamorim Lahasnis B'neim, the people who drive donkeys can make a decision amongst themselves. Whoever loses a donkey, the loch is Yamidaloi Chamor Acher. They're going to all participate in buying him a new donkey. Everybody's going to participate for buying a new donkey. However, if what happened was b'kusya, that the person lost the donkey because he was negligent, he didn't properly watch his donkey, then the halacha is aim mamidim. They don't have to pay for a new donkey. However, was shaloi b'kusya, if it was not by negligence, mamidim loy, they have to, as stipulated, have pay for a new donkey. However, the mamaloi tenuli, if he said, give me another, instead of giving me a donkey as was agreed upon, give me the value of a donkey, Vani Eshmar and Shemalai. Because I maybe won't buy another donkey, and the stipulation was that we're buying you a donkey. So ask the Gemara, of course, that was the stipulation. Why would we think that you could change the terms? Answers the Gemara Pshita. We're speaking about that he has another donkey. So says the Gemara, why would they want to specifically give him a donkey versus giving him the money? Because if he has a donkey, that's going to make that he's going to watch his donkey. And when it's his turn to watch his donkey, he's going to watch everybody else's donkey. So that's why we want him to have a donkey and not just have the money. But he already has another donkey. So he's anyway going to be anxious to watch his donkey. He's going to watch his donkey. So it teaches us the Gemara that there's another concept that we take into concern. There's a difference when you watch one donkey versus when you watch two donkeys. So they would prefer that he have a donkey rather than the money. Because if he's going to have the money, he really won't watch it properly. When I have a donkey, or two donkeys, even more so, he'll watch them properly. So the Or Sameach and all these Gemaras speaks about a very fundamental question. And that is, if there was a stipulation, and the same question comes up, if Chas V'Shalom, there was an accident, and somebody else is obligated to pay for my loss, or in this case, where he's obligated to pay for the donkey. But this person who made the stipulation has insurance, and the insurance will pay for the donkey, will pay for whatever loss he had. Will they still have to pay what they paid? Can he say, the fact that I'm getting an insurance payment is something that we learned earlier in this year, that he could claim, that was Mishamayim Rachmalei. The fact that I have insurance and will get payment from my insurance is my good fortune. It shouldn't take away your obligation to pay. That's the, and so the Or Sameach says that, indeed, the fact that this victim has insurance doesn't make a difference. He gets what he's entitled to get. Many Paiskim disagree, and they say that if he has insurance and the insurance is going to pay for his loss, then the person who made the accident doesn't have to pay because there was no loss. The Masham is of the opinion that the person who made the accident does have to pay. And the question that really is to be understood is, how do we understand the role of insurance and the role of the insurance company in my loss? Is it a separate deal that I made, so to speak, with the insurance company, that if I have a loss, you'll pay me? If that's the case, then that has nothing to do with the damage you caused. Then we could apply the concept that we just learned on Mishmaim Rachmalei. Or is it that the insurance company becomes an owner of this lost object? If the insurance company becomes an owner in this lost object, so there wasn't a loss maybe. It needs to be analyzed. Tana Bonam. Shiar Shais Malachs continues the Gemara. Tana Bonam Sfinu Shais Malachs B'yam. There's a ship that's out in the sea. Avlo Nachshol L'Tavot. There was a terrible storm, and the storm they were in danger. So what they normally do in such circumstances is that they throw things overboard. V'kilu b'masa, and they threw things off the board. So now how do we make the calculation? What is everybody entitled to? So says the Gemara, says the Brayis, mechashim fi ma'asa, vei mechashim fi mamon. We look at how much, we give a value to each pound that was thrown overboard. So if everybody threw 100 pounds, and one person threw overboard 100 pounds of metal, and the other person threw over 100 pounds of gold, each person will get the price that they're entitled to. But, says the Brayis, v'leishanu, as we learned before, v'leishanu fi menig ha-safanim. We always follow the menig ha-mokim. And in fact, I saw the Mordechai says that the menig ha-mokim is so strong that even if it doesn't make sense, if that's the menig ha-mokim, that's what we follow. And says the Mordechai, how is something established as menig ha-mokim as a precedent? If this is what was done three times, b'shayin ha-safanim, continues the Bryce to say, lahasnas shekom isha of the sfina, that if somebody lost a boat, yamla sfina cheres, they're all going to have to participate in buying a new boat. Avdalei b'kusya, but if he lost his boat because he was negligent, emamidinle, we don't have to do so. However, shalai b'kusya, if it was not by negligence, emamidinle, we have to supply him with a new boat. Vampirish l'makam shenes sfinas holchen, if he traveled to a place that was dangerous, then emamidin, we don't have to cover his loss. Ask them a pshita. Of course, that's the halacha. Leitzricha answers the Gemara that the water is shallower in Tishrei than in Nisan. The Menisan in Nisan, Markichad Ashla. The boats only travel the distance of one rope into the sea. Over Tishrei, since the water is shallow, Marchaki Trey Ashli. The Ka'azba Yimayimnesen Lamakam Tishrei. In this, he went as far as they normally go in Tishrei. Madatema, Davshanakat Vazel. It's an understandable mistake, because many times that's how deep he travels. Kamash Milan, that you shouldn't have gone there. And since you shouldn't have gone there, you will not be entitled to get back what you lost. Tanabanan, Sheyar Shars Malak Midbavamid Nayas Vitarfa. There was a group that was traveling in the Midbar, and bandits came to attack them. Vavan Echemhem, and one of them got up, and he was the hero for Hitzel, and he saved everybody's money. Hitzel Amtsa. Everybody will take back their package, and he was the hero. V'mamar, ani atzel atzmi, but if he stipulated, as he did this, that I'm doing it, but you're all going to have to pay for you're going to have to give me what was lost, hitzel atzmi becomes his. Hechidami. So Gemara analyzes this braisa. Exactly what are the circumstances here? Idi yachal hatzel, if it's speaking about that everybody could have saved their money on their own, I feel safe in Amalamsa, so he wasn't such a big hero. Vida lo yachal hatzel, I feel a ratio. Even in the ratio, namilatzmai, because they were all miyash. And since they were all miyash, he should be entitled to it. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Bechama, hocha b'shutfen skinen. The people are traveling are partners. Kagan Zeb, and the Mishnah is teaching us, the Brice is teaching us, shutf. Normally, if you want to dissolve a partnership, it has to be done with the consent of all the partners. Here, the halach is, should they could dissolve it without their consent. I'm a polyg, so we could say that the person who saved, let's divide up this partnership, loy amr, but if he didn't make that stipulation, then they all remain partnership. Loy polyg, they remain partners. Rava Mahacha B'Payal Naskinen. We're speaking about that these people who saved it are the employees of the people whose money was in danger. And Karav, and what the Bryce is teaching us is what Rav told us. Dama Rav, Pael Yachal Achzaboy, a employee can walk out on his job afil b'chatzi yoyim. But until he walked out, he's considered an extension of his employee. And what the reason that he can walk out in the middle of the day, says the Gemara, it's not because, it's only because the Torah says, and therefore we never become an eved to somebody else. Since we never become an eved to somebody else, when this worker says, whatever I'm saving that I should be entitled to, what he is essentially saying is that I am no longer working for you, and therefore I'm entitled to the entire amount as Hefker. He didn't say it. He's a worker. He remains a worker. Everybody could have saved their items, but wouldn't it be easier? So, if he says clearly that I'm doing to keep everything, and they remained silent and they agreed, then it's latzmai. Loi galadate, but if he didn't make the stipulation, and they could have potentially have saved this, then the aloch is that loi galadate, then the aloch will be lemtza. The Pais can say that here we learn in the Gemara the concept of Kli b'nei Yisrael avodim, v'loy avodim l'avodim. And that's why the halacha is that a person can walk out of the job in the middle of the job. Of course, there are many conditions set to this halacha. Most notably, if by walking out, you'll ruin the job and it won't be able to be fixed, then we don't say Kli b'nei Yisrael avodim. And therefore, says the Ramah, that a person should be careful when he signs an employment contract. He shouldn't sign an open-ended employment contract. The Chasam Sofer says that even a Rav should not agree to a Rabbonis for more than 3 years. The Tver Shloima explains that at the beginning of the Seder, we proclaim Hashata Avdei L'Shana Haba B'nei Chayrim. What do we mean? He says, Hashata Avdei, a person working for somebody else can be considered an Eved. Who is a true Ben Chayrim? We learn in Pirkei Avos, Ein Lecha Ben Chayrim, El Misha Oisik B'Taira. So what we say at the beginning of the Seder, right now, we live a life where we work for other people. But we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, L'shona Abar, we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we should be B'nai Chayrim, that should we become Talmid HaChamim and no longer be obligated to be subservient to other people. And the Mefarshim explain, the Aseres HaDibris begin with the words, Anoich Hashem Elokecha, Asher Tzisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. And many Mefarshim asked the question, why did Aseres HaDibris begin with those words? Shouldn't Aseres HaDibris have begun with the words, Asher Barisicha, I created you? Because the main thing that we have to recognize is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, we became Avdei Hashem. And what we do, we clear, Anoich Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. I took you out from being Avodim in Mitzrayim, and now you are my Avodim. And understanding that you're my Avodim means to understand that you can't become Avodim to Avodim. We're B'nei Chayrim, we're Oiskim B'Torah, and we're Avdei Hashem.